Hello and welcome to A Vague Idea. This is a comedy trivia podcast. I'm Nate Regolia. Each week, we subject our guests to a list of topics to find out if they have a vague idea. And this week, we're going to talk about the ideal future that I really thought was possible probably around 12 years ago when we elected Barack Obama, but it has become very evidently impossible, at least in the short term. We're going to talk about Star Trek, a future society where everything is meritocratic. We've done away with money and war and poverty and famine and all this other stuff, and people work together. They wear fun matching jumpsuits or tunic and pant combos as the situation requires. And they get to zip around space, talking to people and solving really nicely written moral and ethical crises on other planets. Our first guest, she is an author published by my publishing company, Space Boy Books. She wrote an incredible short story, poetry, and essay collection. There's an essay in there, I think, right?
Probably.
Yeah, I mean, it depends what you consider an essay, but I'm going to count it.
I haven't finished it yet, but I think you're right.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
It's double verified. That's all that's required to become truth now, is two people said it was so. Our first guest is Addison Heron Wheeler. Addison, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, yeah, thank you. Tell me, what's your personal connection to Star Trek?
I didn't get into Star Trek until later in life because I didn't have cable growing up, but I started watching it probably about like 6 or 7 years ago when I had first moved to Colorado. I didn't know anyone. All I was doing was writing all the time, but like literally by myself in a house in Colorado Springs. And it gave me like so many ideas for stories and, you know, just kind of inspired me. It gave me a lot of ideas about life. And I was like, oh my God, I love this. And I got super into it since then. So right, I don't claim to be a Trekkie, like probably going to make an ass of myself on this show, not knowing as much as I should, but I definitely feel like a close connection to the show. So,
okay. What's your favorite series of those that are out there?
So I haven't seen every single series, which honestly, I mean, it's like years work to see every series because there's a lot of it. But
if we could get paid to watch them, that's the job.
Exactly. Yeah, precisely. But I think probably Next Generation is my favorite just because it's classic and I love the characters. I've seen it like twice now all the way through. So that's also definitely where my knowledge is the best and my favorite series.
Right on. Right on. Well, great. This will be a lot of fun because I'm a big fan of Next Gen as well. I'm actually in the middle of a rewatch. I think I'm in season 6 as I'm barreling through. There's also a really excellent podcast I listen to called Star Trek The Next Conversation with Matt Myra and Andy Secunda, and they're both writers in Hollywood, but they are just going through the series episode by episode, and they give you a lot of inside baseball stuff, but they also just kind of have fun with some of the more absurd stories because TNG isn't perfect, we'll say that. Yeah, there's some flaws, especially when it comes to gender roles. Surprise, surprise. Somehow it still, you know, it took until just about last year for us to start figuring a little bit of that out. Our second guest is Lexi Holzer. And Lexi, talk to me. One, what do you do? What are you about?
I am a stage manager. I obviously not so much right now. But normally I am a stage manager and I'm also an admin assistant for a cleaning company. But yeah, so I generally stage manage about like 6 to 10 productions a year.
Oh, right on. That's super cool.
Yeah. So that's a lot of fun.
Right on.
And I can't wait to do it again someday.
Yeah. It's looking like someday is probably as detailed as we can be for a little while. But I hope very soon, because I know it's got to be, you know, incredibly frustrating for you. And then you've got actors, you've got grips and all sorts of production
so
people.
So many people out of work.
Yeah, of work and just, and I mean, I think one of the beautiful things, and I'm sure Addison will back this up, like we're all in creative endeavors in some serious way. And it is painful to not be able to create or to not be able to participate in that creation. So,
I was supposed to be doing a concert last week and that got canceled, unfortunately, because someone tested positive. So,
oh man. Yeah. And that, I'm so sorry, because that is such a bummer. And it's so frustrating, too, to have this sort of, just even those tiny morsels of joy snatched from us over and over and over again. What is your relationship with Star Trek?
So I came to it even more recently because I never watched it before Addison and I started dating. So I've been watching it now for about 5 years. And Next Gen is also my favorite.
Yeah.
I can't, sticking with the classic.
It's pinnacle of the ideas because, and I mean, I don't know if you've watched any of the later stuff. I've watched some. I do actually like DS9's fun. And after you've finished watching all of Next Gen, you should probably watch DS9.
That's what we're watching right now.
Yeah. I'm going to go through it again because I watched... In the original airing, I watched the first two seasons of DS9, and then I just sort of aged out of paying attention to it for a few teenage years. Mm-hmm. And so I missed the cool things that happen like 3 and 4 seasons in, where Worf shows up and everything else. And it gets really, really cool. But I always thought Sisko is such a cool character. And then Voyager, I've only seen like 2 or 3 episodes of, but I've always liked the actress who plays Janeway, whose name escapes me now.
Kate
Mulgrew.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is a team effort.
I'm
going to be better at this trivia than we think.
It's perfect. See,
we are going to be better than me because I'm like, I know the name of like one actor. Period.
Yeah, but you're a writer, so you can make more things up than I can.
That's true, though.
But yeah, in later series, they keep sort of steering into what is kind of a problem with science fiction at large, in that nothing good can last. Which I think it's realistic. It's a fair storyline, but it also Next Gen's so beautiful because it's the idea that we can be aspirational,
right?
And I think that's important. So let's start the show. The opening question, and Lexi, I'll start with you. Which of the alien races on Star Trek do you most identify with? Like, which do you think you would be? If you could just choose, which one would you want to be?
I would be probably a Vulcan.
Okay. Right? And why is that?
Because I am largely unemotional. Well, no, I don't know that I'm unemotional about things, but I'm like... I have like calm and angry.
Okay. Okay.
And those are that's like most of my range.
Yeah.
So
Spock's known to raise his voice.
Yeah. But like the logical thing really appeals to me, just being like, no, that's not how things are. So.
Yeah. This kind of goes back to the West Wing, right? Where it's like, if I could just be integrity laden and logical and not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Great. Addison. Which Star Trek alien race do you think you would want to be and why?
Okay, I've thought about this a lot. I would definitely be a Bajoran because I always wear excessive jewelry and my passion for social justice always messes me up when I'm in positions of authority and I'm kind of loudmouthed and not good at like fitting into that rigid authority. So I definitely associate more with them. That's the one thing about Star Trek is I don't associate with a lot of the characters because they're so sort of rigid and militaristic. So definitely.
Yeah, there is something about being a rule follower that is a little tricky about Next Gen especially. And yeah, I can see that you've got like an Ensign Ro energy about you.
Oh, she does.
What I'm going for.
And Ro's one of your favorite characters too.
Yeah, she is.
Ro is one of the best written characters in Next Gen because
for sure.
She comes out hot, like just fully formed, well thought out. And every time she appears, those episodes are probably in like the top, the top 50 of the whole series. So
absolutely. And she gets such a good arc in so few episodes.
Yeah, that is true.
And there's all that fun conflict where you're like, did she and Riker hook up or not? Because it seems like they did, but they never put a pin in that.
I mean, I think... If the question is, did Riker hook up with someone? The answer is always yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Of race or species or gender.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I ever realized until probably like 2 years ago that Riker and Troy were just in an open relationship the whole time. And that's what was the implication. It wasn't that like, oh, we're really close, but we used to date. It's no, we just do what we do, knowing that this is whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. pretty cool progressive stuff. Great job on the opening question. I'm going to award each of you 2 points.
Nailed it.
And now, Addison, it's time for round one. Do you have a vague idea about the SS Botany Bay?
Definitely no.
Okay.
Gonna
free to make something up.
Well, I want to say that it probably would be some sort of spaceship that contains, like, either all the pieces for life or sort of like a ecosystem within a spaceship, sort of like an Arthur C. Clarke Rama situation. That would be my guess.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. Lexi, do you have anything to add about the SS Botany Bay?
Well, this feels like a West Wing crossover when I say it, but or a Scandal crossover, actually. But it seems like something where they would steal like a really scary strain of something and then infect someone.
Oh, okay. Okay. A little Andromeda strain sort of vibe or xenomorph egg goo. All right. Yeah, neither of you are correct, but Addison is correct. You're both correct in that it's ship, which, you know, the SS gave that away. Yeah. But the Botany Bay is the name of a sleeper ship that was that the Enterprise encounters in the original series. And that sleeper ship contains Khan and the other superhumans who had survived and been jettisoned from Earth after after World War III, I guess, is what it is in the mythology. You know, in the episode, Kirk says, okay, well, hey, you're a jerk, so we're going to send you this planet. And then it's super hospitable planet, but the planet also, like, blows up and then he loses everything. So, yeah, it's where Khan was hanging out.
All right. I kind of knew all of that except for, the names of any ships. So that's
interesting. Well, and a lot of this is very nerdy as a child, and I was building models of things like the Botany Bay when I was like 8. So there's things ingrained in here that maybe don't belong. But great. Addison, 2 points. Lexi, 1 point. And Lexi, it's time for round number 2.
Okay.
Do you have a vague idea about Star Trek Bridge Crew?
About who they are?
Well, it's a specific proper noun.
Is it not the people who work on the bridge?
Well, this proper noun does comprise the people who work on the bridge. Yes, I mean that's worth something.
So it's the bridge crew in a specific. No, I have no vague idea, actually.
Okay, no, I mean you talked about the people who work on the bridge. That's worth a point. Addison, do you have anything to add about that?
I mean, basically the same. I would say that usually the bridge crew are kind of the only main characters of the show. Like, it's always the bridge crew. I don't know really beyond that. Like, it's just always they're the ones who work on the bridge. They get called to the bridge. Sometimes they go on away missions for some weird reason and never get killed. But yeah.
Except for once. Really, really upsettingly.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there.
Still not over it, guys.
it was one of the more traumatic moments of my childhood when I watched that. I saw that episode live on television in 89 or 90. Star Trek Bridge Crew is a PlayStation 4 video game where you get to play as the captain of a starship. And you get to either play interactively online with other players and you give them orders. So a person can play as the Khan or as the yeoman or whatever. And you tell people to plot a course, you deal with the weapons. You can also play it single player and go around and coordinate everybody's activities and then let it go. It's interesting because it's also VR compatible. So if you have a PlayStation VR, you can basically just be sitting in the captain's chair and look around and then just motion to the people you want to do things and give them commands, including voice commands, which is pretty cool.
This sounds amazing. Sounds like exactly what I want to do.
Yeah. And you could probably get it pretty cheap right now. If you have a PlayStation, I think it's probably like $20. It's well worth it. I haven't played it in months, but I played it for probably a month straight where it was just, it's fun. It's fun. It's just cool to be like, oh yeah, let's go check out that weird satellite. Set a course to that. Impulse 3. So, okay. So great job. 1 point each. And now we're going to play our first game. It is time for the Thunderdome. And this week in the Thunderdome, you will each have to decide who wins in a battle to the death between two of the portrayers of Khan. Ricardo Montalban, the original Khan, or Benedict Cumberbatch, the Khan from Star Trek Into Darkness. So, Addison, we'll start with you. Who do you think wins in a battle to the death in the Thunderdome?
All right, I would definitely say Benedict Cumberbatch. He seems more frail and slim, like you could knock him over with a feather, but I just feel like there's something super conniving about him and all his characters, and he would totally outsmart the other Khan, who, if I remember correctly, was kind of swarthy and hairy and sort of a little bit swaggering. He would totally outsmart him with some crazy maneuver. So yeah, I definitely think him.
Okay. Lexi, what do you think? Do you disagree? I saw you shaking your head.
I love Benedict Cumberbatch, but he is not winning anything. Like, if he has to wrestle the other guy, like, that's not happening.
That's fair.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if he were actually Doctor Strange or Khan or anything, but he's not, and he's really just, like, a very goofy man with weird facial features.
Okay, I guess if we're talking, well, no, even if we're just talking about the actors, my answer is the same, because I feel like he gets typecast, right? He probably is some crazy, conniving, evil genius, and he would still find a way to win.
And in fairness, Ricardo Montalban is already dead.
Okay, that
so does. So if we're thinking about it that way, not too difficult to defeat a corpse.
I kind of think, like, yeah. If his skeleton came up, like, that would probably be it for Benny. Like, he'd be done. Be like, I'm not a doctor. I'm not Khan. I just play him on TV. No.
Oh, I like it. Yeah. So if they are their versions of Khan, I think it's a really tricky battle, because obviously Montalban's Khan, very, very forceful. He's got he's got that plastic makeup chest that's so burly. He's just like, he's this tough guy. He's got his, you know, billowing feathered 80s hair. There's a whole lot of good energy there. But on the other hand, like, Cumberbatch's Khan kills Christopher Pike and shoots up all of, like, the board of directors of Starfleet in a very odd sort of situation, but whatever. Like,
yeah, no, in that situation, definitely Benedict Cumberbatch wins.
Okay, yeah. So it's when, if they're actors, Montalban probably.
Yes.
Because Montalban physically is
better
so
alive.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I love it. All right. Very good. That was a tough bout in the Thunderdome. But Lexi, I'm going to give you 3 points. And Addison, I'm going to give you 2 points. Very good. And now it's time for round number 3. Lexi, do you have a vague idea about Pon Farr?
No.
I would hope you would, based on your alien affinity. I'm going to give you that much.
Oh, so it's Vulcan. Oh, Pon Farr, isn't that like where Vulcans go when they die? That's my vague idea.
Okay. I mean, it's not exactly correct, but I mean, it is associated with the Vulcan situation. Addison, any thoughts on Pon Farr?
I also don't really have an idea, but knowing that it's a Vulcan thing, I'm going to go the other direction and assume that it's a person. So we'll see if correct there.
Okay. It is not a person, unfortunately, okay. Though it afflicts each and every Vulcan who is a person.
Really?
Pon Farr is a phenomenon where it's part of the reproductive cycle of Vulcans. Every 7 years, Vulcan males and females become aroused, and they become more violent and illogical until they mate. So
I do remember this
episode. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's this huge arc with Spock just, like, basically turning into a steroidal teenage boy, and, like, just, he's raging and he's insane, and everybody's like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, I have to Pon Farr, and then, yeah, he's got to go bone, and that's pretty much what it is. So
I just rewatched the episode, but I had no idea.
So let's do a follow-up question that is, what does it say? What does it say about the characterization of Vulcans, that the idea is they can be logical, but only for 7 years at a time before they have to be completely physical, right? Because it seems to me that what they're saying is, hey, these can be thinky people, but they can only be thinky people for a certain amount of time. And then you have to be in your body in a wholesale, vigorous and you know, violent kind of way. And then you can go back to being in your head. So what do you think that means about humans? Because all of this is always commentary on humanity.
It feels like a, you know, just a statement about how Vulcans compartmentalize and how good they are at it for a certain period of time. And then after a while, just everyone has blue balls too bad. And it's just, you know, it's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. They have green blood, but blue balls. Okay.
Yeah. Just... Well.
Addison, what do you
think? I don't want to think about what color that makes it.
No. Yeah. Let's, I mean, we can, it's fine. Yeah. This is a comedy show and it's explicit. So we're allowed to, if you have thoughts, we can talk about the mixology.
I actually don't want to go there.
Nice, and I wasn't sure if swearing was okay. So now
I'm yeah, no, fuck yes. Swear away.
Okay, yeah, because I said blue balls, and then I was like, oh, I maybe should have asked that question.
Turquoise testicles is way more appropriate.
Yes. Oh, and it's so much more logical, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It like that.
Yeah, Addison, do you have any thoughts about how that reflects on humans or what it means to Vulcans?
I mean, I feel like it's similar to me. The part of Vulcans that I relate to is that I'm a Libra, so it's like everything's super practical and in its place, and I'm always, you know, not over emotional, not letting my emotions get the best of me, but then when they do, it's like hysterical sobbing or getting really angry. So I totally get that. It's like when you aren't like this super emotionally expressive person, that happens. So.
Oh yeah, I am also a Libra. So things that will happen is nothing will bother me. And then I will be say making a peanut butter sandwich and I'll drop the knife that has peanut butter on it on the floor and I will become irrationally just upset. Like, fuck, yeah. I can't believe I dropped, what the fuck, you know. And it's very silly. Yeah. The outbursts are, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just like we have like a little steam valve and it just has to go off now and again. Otherwise, we can just be there. We can just chill out. I wonder, are Libras Vulcans? That's an interesting thought.
I think
Lexi, what's your sign?
I'm an Aquarius.
Okay. Okay.
And not only that, but I'm a triple Aquarius.
Whoa. That's like unheard of, isn't it? I'm not super familiar.
I don't know anyone else who's a triple anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough to get everything in all the houses at the same time.
Yeah, it was really well planned, I guess.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
You might be the chosen one.
The chosen person is just like a really logical asshole person who enjoys true crime and conspiracy theories.
I can see it.
That that's not what we're looking for.
I heard your corgi.
Yeah. Rocket's gonna bark at the door too. Yeah. It's just part of quarantine.
Now Ruby might start barking because she heard him bark.
They're going to talk. They're going to become pen pals. And then we're going to have to Zoom them together every week.
Ruby really needs friends. So honestly, good idea.
Nice. Yeah, I think that's very interesting. Just the idea that I like the idea that, you know, Vulcans are supposed to be this ideal sort of centered logical version of humanity. But we would, like, no matter what, humanity's still going to seep through. There's still going to be anger. There's still going to be sexuality and sadness and emotion. So, which is always a really interesting plot line that they deal with. I mean, there's the TNG episode with Spock's father that Picard, because they link and Picard takes on all of his emotions. I assume you both remember that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which has some great Patrick Stewart, just crazy mad acting in a very theatrical way. Delightful.
Part about TNG.
Yeah, the idea that someone with that much talent was on just like a syndicated show that wasn't even, I mean, it aired on Channel 2 here in Colorado, so that was like it wasn't even the CBS channel.
Yeah.
So just like whatever local, whoever picked it up, mm-hmm. You've got Patrick Stewart on this show for 7 years.
Yeah.
Anyway, just always boggles my mind. He's so good. In fact, everybody on the cast is really pretty good. Like, there's not bad actors other than mostly the guests.
Yeah. Well, there's that Shakespeare connection with the next generation that if we go that route, Lexi would definitely beat me because I don't really like Shakespeare, but she's super knowledgeable.
Oh, yeah. We could do a whole game on just times when Shakespeare is invoked in the cold open of a TNG episode.
Oh gosh, so many times.
And then we could talk a little about Dickens too, when Data's playing Scrooge, which is one of the silliest things that ever happened. But good job on Brent Spiner's part. Great on Ponfar. Addison, 1 point. Lexi, 2 points. And round number four. Addison, do you have a vague idea about Alexander Roshenko?
Yes, actually, thank God I do. I believe that is Worf's son, and he's Worf's cute little son. And yeah, that's definitely who he is. So I'm very proud of myself for that, for remembering that. But yeah, Worf's son, I think he comes into the story arc when Worf is reunited with his ex-fling, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives with Worf for a little while. He goes to the school, and there's the whole thing where Worf is kind of trying to teach him the Klingon ways, and he's resistant to the Klingon ways because he just wants to be a kid. So yeah, that one I actually have more than a vague idea about, which I'm quite proud.
It's very good. Yeah, absolutely. Lexi, anything to add about Alexander Roshenko?
Well, I think he comes to live with Worf because his mother dies. And
that's correct. Yeah.
And then he spends a whole bunch of time living with his grandparents, mm-hmm. who are human, because that's who took Worf in. And so that kind of like amps up his human side, which makes it hard for Worf to interact with him because he's not into the normal Klingon things. But yeah, but he's adorable. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Also the actress who plays, and I can't remember the character's name for Worf's former fling, but I always loved that character, and it was devastating when she was killed, because she was like, you should be a series regular. You're one of the most interesting people, because her whole thing is I'm half human, half Klingon, and you're not going to tell me that I can't be both. And Worf is always fighting this conflict about not wanting to be anything but Klingon because of the whole honor thing and whatever. So cool. And Alexander is played by the child actor who I think was Andy on The Growing Pains. So he was like a little, or maybe not The Growing Pains. It might have, Family Ties is what it was. He was the youngest kid on Family Ties.
Okay.
That came in like the second to last season. The way that all those sitcoms introduce an adorable child to save a flagging. Yeah. Yeah. It's very good. 2 points each on Alexander Roshenko. And I always thought it was interesting because that's another one of those cool things. Like, Worf is adopted by a Russian couple. They're just open to having a child. And so he's raised, with this disconnection from his culture, but also a pretty good connection, because it seems like they encourage him to go be Klingon as much as possible.
Yeah. And often to like the detriment of their own relationship, it seems, because when they visit, and there's so much tension between Worf and his parents, because it's like embarrassing.
It's interesting because they're so loving, but Worf is so, Worf's just, he's got the whole family dishonor thing on his shoulders that we all learn about throughout the thing, that, his dad wasn't actually bad and all this other stuff, but he carries so much weight. And I guess that's one of those things where when I rewatch the series, I always wish they would have gone back and known that from the get, because it feels like they had no idea what to do with Worf other than, there's a Klingon on this ship and that's novel. That's it. That's all we've got. And then by season three, suddenly it's like, he's got an elaborate backstory that's very compelling. And it's about being an outsider who's trying to be an insider while still maintaining outsiderness.
Yeah.
You know? Which I think is interesting just as a sort of a parallel to the way that we all live our lives. Because to some extent, like, we all want to fit in, but we're all trying to maintain our self-definitions and pursue the things that matter to us the most. So you're trying to be in groups, in out groups, and out groups, and in groups, but you can't necessarily do all of it successfully, cool. I guess. Yeah.
And then like way later on, if people are listening to this and they haven't watched TNG, spoilers, but.
Oh yeah. If you're listening to this and you haven't seen the show, it's 20 something years old. Get with the program.
But with his relationship with Deanna, I feel like he matures and becomes like a part of the group in a way that he never was before.
Oh, yeah.
Before having that relationship with Deanna.
Yeah, it's beautiful because everybody does really grow together in interesting ways. Worf stops being just the punchline of I want to shoot something, and Picard just says, no, don't do that. That's a dumb idea right now. You know, or he just gets his ass kicked every single time there's like a hand-to-hand situation. Yeah. But yeah, but he gets layers.
Does he always get like beat up? I guess I didn't notice. I mean, yeah, everyone's gonna fight
it. In fights, kind of like gets all scrappy when he shouldn't.
Yeah, I guess he's just,
but yeah, then he,
Data's out there getting beat up most of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Data gets like exploded and stuff. One of my favorite things about that TNC podcast is that they talk about, you know, it's weird that when you know that Data can run with super speed, because he does it like one time where they speed the film up and he's like flying through the hallways.
Oh yeah.
They don't understand why he doesn't do that every single time he's asked to go anywhere. Because of how like one, I mean, it would probably be a little too comedic, but it would be amazing if it was just like the cold open, captain's log, and then Data's walking down the hallway and he gets, and somebody, you know, calls him on the comm and he's just like, oh, okay. And then he just sprints, you know,
man, all the way across the ship. Maybe it's like an iPhone battery. Like if he does it too much, it's like all his energy for the day.
That's a good point. Plus he won't be able to recharge as well every single time because lithium wears down. And then what is he going to do? Then he's going to be slow, like decoding an alien language.
Yeah,
that's not going to help anybody.
For a couple minutes and then he recharges.
Yeah. I mean, I assume Data's got to be somewhat solar powered too. There are a lot of stars around. True, so he should be able to absorb a good amount of energy. That would be the way I'd design a robot anyway. But
I think, well, judging by having a cat, and we have one person in the house who is the only person who is liked by the cat, like, I think when you have that sort of cat love, you could totally be powered by purrs.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, yeah. He
does have a cat that only likes him, so.
Yeah.
That's it. It is very sustaining. I mean, having any pet just sort of favor you and lean on you for things, it makes you feel special. And it gives you a little boost.
Cat out of the trash and saved him, but it's fine.
Yeah. That's always like about me. Maybe what we should do is do another episode and we can bring the cat on and we can just have like a nice mediated conversation so that everybody can work everything out.
We should.
Because it seems like, you know, I would like to hear the cat's perspective as well, but I want to make sure that we could put some of this bad blood away, you know?
Yeah, I could go to therapy with my cat and work through the reasons why he doesn't like me. I totally would, because I love him so much.
I can't imagine an animal that I wouldn't do that with for the most part, because I'm always surprised. I'm like, why don't you like me? Animals almost always like me, which is a wonderful thing.
Everyone else likes me. Why can't you?
Yeah, just get with the program. I'm great. Great job on Alexander Roshenko. 2 points each. And now it's time to play our second game. We're going to play Red Shirt or Not Dead Shirt. So you're familiar with the term Red Shirt in that in the original series, the named characters who were not part of the main bridge crew, who wore red tunics, were always sent down on away missions, and they inevitably were killed by something. And then, you know, Kirk and Spock and Bones could try to figure out what was going on, but they go, oh no, he's dead, Jim. So the point of this game will be, I'm going to give each of you two names, and you will just have to tell me whether that is a red shirt, who a person who literally was killed in the original series wearing a red shirt, or whether they are not that, or possibly whether there's something in between. So, Lexi, we'll start with you.
Okay.
Yeoman Leslie Thompson. Is Yeoman Leslie Thompson a red shirt or not?
I think, yes. I think she's a red shirt.
You're correct. Yeah. Yeoman Leslie Thompson is the first female red shirt ever in Star Trek. The first female character with the security red who was killed. It's good job.
Yeah.
Okay. Addison, Ensign Sonia Gomez.
I'm going to go with also red shirt.
Unfortunately, she's not. She works in engineering with Geordi. She spills her coffee on Captain Picard in like a season 2 episode, and she's never seen again, but she's not killed on screen, so we can't assume that she is.
She was probably killed off screen though.
I assume that she was sent to the brig and then tortured to death by Worf or something. Yeah. Practice on her, because
spill coffee on Picard. You don't do that.
You don't do that. You can spill Earl Grey hot on him, but not coffee. Lexi. Tasha Yar, red shirt or not?
Well, does she have the red uniform? Yeah, she does. I mean, I know she dies. So, yes, the only main character to have, like, ever gotten killed in an away mission. I don't know about other, about, like, Discovery or Voyager, but yes. Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's a weird both case, right? Because she wore the green or gold that security wears on TNG.
Okay.
But she is killed in a very traditional red shirt sort of way. Do you all know why her character was killed?
Because she wanted to go do other things, and then she realized that was a horrible idea, and she kept coming back as her sister. It's like,
yes.
Herself in another timeline.
Yeah, or herself in another timeline, or her as her own Romulan progeny.
Yeah. It just makes me so mad, because I'm like, you just figured out so fast that you should have stayed on Star Trek. You had, like, the most amazing character. You were a woman in the security position. And very heated about this.
Yeah, Tasha Yar is such a cool character. And it's such a bummer because as far as I understand it, Denise Crosby basically was like, I want to go do movies. I think she got Pet Sematary is the movie that she's in. So she got offered that movie. She said, okay, well, this show isn't going anywhere. And in fairness, like, her character doesn't really have any lines or arcs. Like, the most notable thing she does before she's killed is sleep with Data, I think, when everybody's infected with the horniness disease. You know, it's a bummer that she sort of gets a really interesting sort of level of character engagement in the episode where she's killed off. And then, and then she comes back several times over in different iterations of herself. I think yesterday's Enterprise is probably the coolest one because she gets to come back as herself on a wartime version of the Enterprise when she decides to go hang out with, what's his name? Shooter McGavin, the guy that played the other captain, or he was the first mate, I guess, on the other ship.
That's amazing.
I think that's the alternate reality one I was thinking of.
Yeah. That's definitely the alternate reality one.
In the universe where she didn't die, they're all militarized and fighting the Klingons or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a whole interesting, like, war timeline that make that show. Give me that show. Get people who kind of look like all the original cast or whatever.
Yeah,
or just give me a new ship in the TNG timeline that's doing different stuff. I want more of that era. Anyway.
Yeah.
Addison, how about Ensign Rizzo? Is Ensign Rizzo a red shirt or not?
Once again, I have nothing, but I'm just going to say yes, because it seems like the safest answer right now.
You are correct. Ensign Rizzo, another classic red shirt from the original series. He gets plugged by some kind of alien. I can't remember which one. And so very good. 2 points for Lexi and 1 point for Addison in red shirt or not dead shirt. And now, from the makers of Pomme ou Pomme de Terre, it's La Chose Française Arbitraire. That's the arbitrary French thing. And the only thing that's French about it is the name. So I'm going to pose a question to you. The whole point of the La Chose Française Arbitraire is it's an arbitrary thing. I'm going to pose a question, which is, it's going to start with a statement, and then it's going to turn into a question.
Okay.
Welcome to the continuum. Now that you're Q, what's the first thing you're going to do with your boundless power? Lexi, go first.
Boundless power. Man, okay. Sorry, this is hard.
I think that's why... the several episodes where people are given the opportunity to be Q, including Riker, it's always like, it's a real conundrum. What do you do with all the power?
I'd raise Atlantis.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. What does that look like? What do you want out of Atlantis?
I want Atlantis to look like the Little Mermaid, but I would have like a whole like sea kingdom.
Right on. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Are you ruling your sea kingdom with an iron fist or an iron flipper, I guess? Or are you, are you a benevolent leader?
Oh, yeah, I'm definitely a benevolent leader. Probably, like, kind of a hippie leader.
Okay. I'm
kind of laissez-faire about most things, you know, whatever.
Lots of puka shell necklaces, then.
Oh, no.
No, it still doesn't work even underwater. Yeah.
So
I believe that was a thing in the 90s.
That's what we're doing. We're doing hippie goth mermaid. That's what's happening in my kingdom.
Hippie goth is like a really cool, that's a cool hybrid. That's like a D&D creature.
That's what our goth.
So combine it with a mermaid and that's really a D&D creature.
Yeah. Okay, great. Addison, you're Q now. What are you going to do with your boundless power?
So if in this scenario, me right now, if I'm Q, then I still don't know if there's life anywhere else in the universe because Star Trek is fictional. And right now I think that there's not. So the first thing I would do is go see if there is life. Like I would go explore and find out if there's actually what else is out there in the universe.
Okay.
And kind of use that to make any decisions about what happens next.
Right on. So like where, I mean, what do you, how does that look? Are you just going to go, are you just going to pick a random direction and just go and see what you run into? Or do you think you're going to stop at specific planets or anything? Or
but if I was Q, I could kind of pull up like a Google Maps out of my head that kind of told me. And then I'd be like, okay. And then I'd go explore some areas. And then when I had an idea of, I'm assuming in this scenario, there would be life on other planets since I would be given power by life that isn't originated from Earth. But then, yeah, I would go gather all that information and then make decisions from there.
Okay. You're a very benevolent Q. You're really trying to think about everybody else.
Yes, definitely.
Not nearly as mischievous as the Q that John DeLancey plays.
Probably.
at any point, would either of you make a mariachi band appear out of nowhere?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Why not?
No.
No? Different kind of band, Addison?
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe like a chorus of like gorgeous voices or something, but not a mariachi band.
I always thought a jazz combo would be fun.
Yeah, that would be good.
I think that would be great just to be able to snap that into wherever I was. Go, oh yeah, no, I need to stop listening to this person have a phone call in a coffee shop. Boom. Yeah. Jazz combo.
Yeah, I would definitely like snap and there's like a big band, you know, like and then there's just like a whole bunch of couples doing like dancing in front for no reason.
I love it. What do you both think of the character of Q? Like how does Q strike you? How does Q hold up for especially people who've kind of come later to the series and everything?
Q usually just makes me really angry.
Okay.
I love Q. Definitely opposite answer there. Not
like the same characters on television, though.
Never like the same characters. I love Q. I feel like he's like, I like that he's like mischievous and a trickster. And I like that he's kind of like what I imagine if there was some sort of god, would that's what it would be. It's like, I have all this power, but then I'm going to make you find out stuff for yourself. And he might mess with them a lot, but he doesn't really, if I remember correctly, I don't think he kills anyone, at least not anyone who's like super important on the show. And he usually imparts some pretty good lessons. So I like him. I mean, I definitely think he's a multi-dimensional character with things not to like, but I really like him. And I like that actor. And then seeing him later on, I'm always like, oh, it's Q.
Oh, I mean, he'll never get away from being Q, which is not a bad thing. I mean, that's what a great role. And yeah, he's fun because he does, he has so many fun episodes where his whole purpose is just to like shake up Picard's life, which is sort of funny because it really, if you pulled those episodes out, they could each just be individual like rom-com movies.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, this stuffy starship captain just can't find love. And then along comes an alien who's going to teach him how to have a good time. So Lexi, why don't you like him?
Sorry, I got like stuck in my own little, like, I just started imagining like Q setting up a game show for Picard and being like, who are you going to be with? There's like that lady, that archaeologist lady who like keeps stealing him and is kind of a shitty person. And
oh yeah.
And then Beverly and then Guinan. That's what I picked.
What is, and okay, so they're on like a dating game style show.
Yeah.
I mean, one, like who does Picard pick?
Well, I mean, if he's smart, he picks Beverly, but
there's a lot of baggage there, though. He killed her husband. Not intentionally, but I mean, he led to his death.
Yeah, but they really seem to be over that.
Yeah, like, it's true. They're definitely, they're having tea in very small robes several times.
Yeah,
like much smaller than her.
Yeah, well,
a lot shorter than hers is. Just amazing.
when you've got that Patrick Stewart torso, you just show it off, you know?
Well,
Him and Wesker always with the revealing robes and undergarments. Hilarious.
He should end up with Beverly, but yeah, I guess it's weird because Picard seems almost asexual a lot of times. And then there are these flashes of, maybe he's into something.
Yeah. And then there's like that talk about how him and Guinan like kind of had a thing, you know, and there's always like a little bit of tension between them.
Oh, yeah.
Which I really just love because like Whoopi Goldberg has been with like the most random to me partners. Like,
Ted Danson for a while, right?
She's with Ted Danson. Yeah. With some other strange white dude. And I was like, yeah, okay, just add like Patrick Stewart to that list, and I would be like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah, no, it all tracks. Like, let's just let's make it happen. Let's write some fanfic.
Oh, I'm sure that fanfic is out there.
Yeah, there's I'm sure like 5% of the internet is already dedicated to it. So yeah. I just need to spend 3 seconds Googling. Great. Yeah. Great job on Les Choses Francaises Arbitraires. 1 point each because it's arbitrary and, you know, you're both absolutely correct. So now we're going into the final topic. The game is very close. Addison, you have 12 points. Lexi, you have 14 points.
Oh, shit.
So everything could change with the final topic. And how much either of you know about this particular topic that I'm about to ask. So, Addison, do you have a vague idea about Robin Loeffler?
Nope. I'm not going to win this one because I don't think that I do. I mean, sounds...
Yeah. The thing is, you're definitely going to know the moment that we talk about who she is.
Probably. And it sounds... Because it sounds familiar, I'm going to say that it probably has something to do with the Next Generation. But... So that's correct. My guess. Is that she's a character on The Next Generation, and that's my best guess. So.
Great, yeah, that'll earn you a point. And if Lexi doesn't have anything else, like this could get close to a tie. Robin Loeffler.
Is that like I'm gonna say it's a girl that? Oh my God, what is his name? Will Wheaton went to the Academy with.
Okay, I mean, you're close. I don't know that they went to the Academy together, but she's definitely a girl that Wesley Crusher hangs out with.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was a guess.
Yeah. Robin Loeffler is the wunderkind young ensign on the Enterprise portrayed by Ashley Judd.
Yes.
In TNG. So she's like, she's in, I think, 2 or 3 total episodes. And she has all of Loeffler's rules or she basically has like rules for life that she repeats throughout the episode as sort of a character tick. Uh-huh. But she helps Wesley get the rest of the crew unhooked from the very addictive game that Riker brings back from shore leave.
Oh.
They all want to play the weird Google Glass cup and ball game that for some reason just keeps everybody busy.
Yeah, it's like literally addictive.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, I totally remember that.
And she also works with Geordi preparing the Enterprise for combat in the episode Darmok when Picard is stranded on the planet with the captain who speaks only in descriptive metaphors.
Oh, God. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Yeah. Robin Loeffler.
I don't think I could tolerate that way of speaking. Like, I think it would... drive me insane.
It reminds me of being an English major. Like, right. Say what you actually mean and stop with these metaphors.
Well, and I think it's a really good episode, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense because even with those metaphors, you still have to have some sort of longer story to create the context, right? You can say Darmok and Jalata Tanagra, but everybody has to have read or heard the story of that to understand what the whole thing is, which means there has to be more language unless all of the story is, okay, so these two guys, which we're going to say they are a metaphor for something else, right? So I don't know. It would be the idea that in trying to describe people in line at the grocery store, I would have to say, okay, so you know how planets sometimes line up. So there are planets lined up and there's food. You know how food grows, and so the sun creates food. I mean, it's insane. It's insane to even imagine communicating that way and having it work. It's beautiful for what it's trying to do, but man, I've really tried to, like, speaking of English majors, like, I've tried to map out how the sentence structure would work. Like, how do you even how would you communicate basic things like, hey, we need to turn around?
Right.
Yeah.
So you have to remember a mythological story where someone turned around, reference that, and then reference the story that talks about the encompassing pronoun of we. It's wild.
That would make me crazy.
Yeah. You would want to go to a planet and fight an invisible beast.
Names. This is not like a language that Addison could speak because she can't remember anyone's name.
Oh yeah, that would be so hard for me.
That's probably a Libra thing too, because I'm terrible with names. I'm that person who has to be like, you just said who you were literally 5 minutes ago, and I probably repeated it to you, but I don't know. I started thinking about something, it's confusing. Yeah. Well, great job. 2 points for Lexi and 1 point for Addison, and so that's gonna cement Lexi's victory this week on A Vague Idea. Sorry about that, Addison.
I figured. I am not good at trivia. Fun fact, I did, what's it called? Academic quiz team.
Oh, nice.
School, which was super fun because it was a way to get a varsity letter without actually playing a sport. And it looked good on everything and it was fun. And I was a pop culture expert, but I was awful at it. Like, really hilariously awful at it.
What was the question? Well, like, what was the worst question? What was the question that you should have known but you didn't have the answer to?
I don't even know. Like, the questions were everything from, like, you know, pop culture, like classic rock or literature, all the way through like calculus problems and stuff. And so
I was that pop culture.
What?
How was that pop culture?
No, it was like that through like math and.
Oh.
Okay. Exactly. Yeah.
So I was basically on the team in case a pop culture question came up because all the nerdy kids didn't know any of that. When we did equations, I would just sit there because it was laughable. I never got past like trigonometry, so it was laughable to think that I would be like figuring out the calculus problems. But
you knew the kind of shoes that Carrie was wearing in episode 16 of Sex and the City.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I knew the stupid stuff that made no sense and had no point, which is the theme of my life. So,
but it's probably more valuable now than ever to know that stuff.
True.
Because all of reality is completely made up now. So all you have to do is reference the mythology of our past.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So great job. Lexi, 16 points. You have won this week. Is there anything that you would like to plug? Anything that you want people to know about, care about, or do?
In January, I'm working with Loveland Opera Theater to do a Rodgers and Hammerstein live stream concert artists. Yeah, so we have six singers, and then I think 5 instrumentalists, and it's going to be amazing. So Loveland Opera Theater.
Super cool. Okay. And is that going to be the kind of thing that you make a donation or buy a ticket for and you can watch the live stream?
So I believe that it's, we decided it's totally free. You can make a donation.
Okay.
And it will also be up on Loveland Opera's website after it happens. So you can go back and watch it and donate or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we have beautiful, beautiful voices. So it'll be amazing.
That's so cool. I have done, I guess, two remote live experiences so far.
Mm-hmm.
Where another podcast that I really like, How Did This Get Made? I don't know if you've either listened to that, but they did an episode about the movie Cats that they did as a remote live episode a couple weeks ago.
Oh man.
It was great. It was super awkward and clumsy because they had a ton of technical difficulties and things were delayed and everything was screwed up. But it was really...
You mean like the movie Cats? Or...
Well, I mean, I think the movie Cats unequivocally was a mistake. And they messed a lot of stuff up. The fact that the internet wants them to put the buttholes back in which is weird.
They want them to put the buttholes back in.
Yeah, there was a push on Twitter, I guess, to release the butthole cut, which I think is, I mean, that alone is just the funniest phrase I've heard.
Yeah. How much worse could it be?
It's probably all the furries being like, that's what I was watching it for.
Give me the, stop breaking my suspension of disbelief. I want to believe I can fuck these cats. terrible. But yeah, so these remote events are really awesome. And listeners, yeah, definitely check out the Loveland Opera Theater website so that you can listen to this beautiful, beautiful sounds. Addison, anything that you would like to plug?
Yes, as always, many things. You can get my book, Respirator. I almost forgot what it was called. See, I'm not good with names. You can get Respirator through Space Boy. And you can also get my book, Wicked Woman, which is about women in metal, also online. Just look up Wicked Woman on Facebook. Or you can hit me up and get it from me directly. Lexi and I also have a clothing brand now that we should plug, or at least a vintage and thrifted shop called Four Curvy Bitches. Not four, but it's Four Curvy Bitches. It is vintage and thrifted femme clothing sizes, woman's large and above. So basically anything large and above. We have all different stuff that we post all the time. Also make sure to read Outfront Magazine. If this is in December, starting in January, we're going to go to monthly issues. They're going to be big, beautiful issues, and it's going to be super cool. And you can also follow us online at outfrontmagazine.com. Also make sure to read New Noise, which is the other magazine I edit, newnoisemagazine.com. That's a good one if you're into punk and metal. And you can also find my writing at High Times Culture and Dope if you are into cannabis. And yeah.
And honestly, if you're not into cannabis, why are you listening to this podcast? Because this has got to be 10 times better. I think you posted on Facebook about For Curvy Bitches.
You were both
rocking sweaters, like cardigans. Yep.
I just invited a bunch of people to like it, so probably right popped up.
Yeah, I think that's super cool. I mean, I love stuff like that. You got to find people. Give everybody the audience they want. And holy shit, you are a pro at plugs. That's for sure.
I got a lot. I'm sure I missed things. Oh, I did miss one thing. Oh, no, it'll be too late because it's in November. I was going to say come to the drive-in event for Aurora Pride, but it's November 14th.
So hopefully you attended the drive-in event at Aurora Pride before you listen to this show.
Yeah.
thank you both so much for taking the time to do this. I hope you had a good time. I would love to have you back on at some point in the future.
Absolutely.
We can go even more focused. We can go straight at only TNG episodes. We could go into a specific episode if you wanted to do something deep divey like that. We could pick a show. We could all watch it. And then I could kind of frame stuff around that to just give us the opportunity to really get into it. Maybe we do a two-parter because the two-parters have a whole lot of meat on them and they're really good. But yeah, I really appreciate just anyone who's a fan of a show that's so hopeful, especially in times that are less hopeful. I won't say hopeless because we've still got each other. Listeners, if you enjoy this show, please subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. You can also check us out on social media. We have a Facebook group called the A Vague Idea Podcast online group thing. And there is the A Vague Idea Podcast Network page that you can join too. If you just can't get enough of me saying, listen to the shit we make, you're probably tired of that. Otherwise, if you like our theme song that you heard at the top of the show, that was by Michael J. O'Connor. You can find his music at michaeljoconnor.bandcamp.com. And you know, beyond that, just let's continue to take care of each other. We are still dealing with a pandemic. We are hopefully, at the time of airing, living in a slightly more optimistic world where people's individual rights, the rights of people of color, the rights of LGBTQA plus people are a little safer feeling, and where we have the ability to preclude the destruction of women's rights and body autonomy. But if not, I hope you have already taken up arms and you're ready to fight the good fight. So that's where we're at.
Yeah.
You can tell a lot about history just from thinking about what you can predict. But tonight we have all had a vague idea about Star Trek, and that is a good thing because the devil is in the details. Bye-bye.
Bye.
A Vague Idea is written and produced by me, Nate Regolia, with Shannon Page, and sometimes John Perros. Information about topics often come from Wikipedia, so hey, why not donate a bit to that? Sound effects are Creative Commons public domain. If you like this podcast, tell a few people, and subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And if you happen to like reading science fiction, check out the small press I started with my friend Sean Gorkowski. You can find Spaceboy books at readspaceboy.com.